For many people living with migraine, gut issues like bloating, nausea, or sluggish digestion are just an everyday part of life. But until now, it feels like they've mostly been separated as individualized issues and not a part of migraine. Luckily, research is showing us that they all may be intimately connected through something called the gut-brain axis. The gut-brain axis is a communication channel that connects the trillions of microbes in our gut up to the nerves and pathways in our brain that control pain and inflammation. Today, we're joined by Dr. Robert Boniker, a leading integrative medicine expert. He will help us understand what is the gut microbiome, what does it mean for migraine, and most importantly, how can we take practical steps to better improve our gut and brain health? Dr. Boniker, welcome back to the Migraine World Summit.
A pleasure to be here. And your introduction was great as far as everything that the microbiome and the gut-brain axis has the potential to do.
All right, let's start with the foundation. What is the gut-brain axis?
Well, it's a term that's sort of evolving. We know the gut-brain axis is probably the easiest way to term it, but there's also other ways, including the oral gut-brain axis, the oral gut microbiome brain axis, and others even bring in the immune system. So it's really all about the various interconnections between multiple systems that influence the potential for migraine.
That feels just as overwhelming as I feel like most of the advice we are getting from our doctors about how to take care of our gut to better improve migraine. So where should we start? Like, what makes up the gut microbiome?
Yes. So I think it's definitely a term that can be very complex. And when we start talking about microbiome testing, that's even more complex. But I try to simplify it as much as I can to say that it's more than just about the bugs in our gut, which, as you mentioned, there are hundreds of millions or trillions. We actually have more microbiome or bacterial cells in our body than our actual human cells. So we're more a host than we are actually human, which is mind-boggling. But it's actually more about those bugs. It's about what they do, the factory that they create, and the neurotransmitters that they create, the vitamins that they actually create, which influence migraine that we'll talk about. It's also about the communication system. So we sometimes talk about the gut as a second brain. Really, in many ways, it's the more prominent brain. 90% of the signals from the vagal nerve go from the gut to the brain. Only 10% comes down from the brain. 90% of the serotonin in our body is made in the gut. So it's really a prominent organ that's more than just about the bugs. That's number one. And number two, I tell patients it's not all a bad thing. We usually talk about, you know, leaky gut, dysbiosis, all these terms about how the gut can make things worse. And in fact, there's many more ways that we can influence the gut to help us prevent migraine and other medical issues than it can cause harm. So those are, I think, really important. And I think the third important thing is it's not all about diet. Obviously, what we eat influences the gut prominently, but there's so many other lifestyle approaches, sleep, stress management, even neuromodulation, exercise that influence the gut-brain axis. So there's many avenues to approach it, and it's not just about the bugs.
How does this communication work? I know you mentioned something about they, you know, work with digestion and they can influence the vitamins and minerals that we digest. How does that communicate back up to the brain, and how is that involved in migraine?
Absolutely. So we know that there is a lot of nerve bundles that communicate between the brain and the gut. The one that we're probably most familiar with that has been termed within the migraine literature as well as, you know, just medical literature is the vagal nerve. And the vagal nerve comes from the word wandering because it's the longest cranial nerve. And it goes not just from, you know, the brainstem where all the cranial nerves sit into the neck and other areas. It goes all the way to the gut. So that's why we know what happens in the brain can influence the gut. That being said, there's other nerves that also communicate. Most importantly, how the gut is feeling, whether it's stressed, whether it's constipated, whether there is, you know, let's say there's gastritis or the early signs of an ulcer, all those things can influence the vagal nerve. And when the vagal nerve feels attacked, or there's inflammation, other issues, it goes into retreat. So in many ways, thinking about the communication going silent or going very low makes it hard for the gut and brain to communicate. So a lot of what we're going to be talking about is how do we influence that communication system to be optimal, so that all channels are open up and down, so that if something good is happening in the gut, it's going to influence the brain positively to hopefully reduce migraine. The other question I think you brought up was the factory and how that influences communication. We know, for example, the gut, when it's working optimally, there's no leaky gut, meaning it's not over-absorbing or under-absorbing. It can actually create a number of our B vitamins. So we know we've talked about riboflavin, we've talked about B12. It can actually create that in the gut with the cofactors that are there. But if the gut is, again, constipated and having issues, it can't make enough. So yes, we can take those vitamins. Yes, we can eat those in our diet. But a primary source is our own factory, our gut, to make those B vitamins. We also know the gut helps to absorb more magnesium. So if the gut's working well, a lot of the work is already done. It's more about making sure that the gut is able to communicate and able to work as an optimal factory.
Let me know if this is oversimplifying it. I know during a migraine attack, we know that the gut isn't really working that well. We try to avoid using oral medications because it might not be absorbed. Are you saying that the conversation between both the brain and the gut going both ways are influencing that during an acute migraine attack? And would you say that because our gut is not able to communicate as well, it's not able to tell our brain, hey, you're safe, we can end this attack? Or is that a little too far off?
I think that, no, that's a good analogy. And we know for many folks dealing with migraine, when they have an acute attack, the many parts of the body, as we're dealing with, this threat known as a migraine, the parts of the body that aren't immediately working to reduce the migraine might reduce. So the gut, for example, can quiet down. That's why sometimes the medications, they'll work as well because we're not absorbing. There's not normal peristalsis or movement of the gut. There's nausea, which can also increase inflammation and make it difficult to absorb. Obviously, you know, that can go into full-blown vomiting, which we can, you know, lose our medication. So if the gut is unhappy or feeling in danger, which often the signal from the brain down from the vagal nerve and other nerves is telling the gut danger, then the gut also kind of quiets down and tries to just support the brain by not overdoing. That's one explanation that's out there. At the same time, the gut is also trying to support the brain by saying, what can I do? What neurotransmitters can I support? What signals can I send to the brain with serotonin, GABA, and some of the relaxing neurochemicals to help the brain calm down and de-inflame? So it's a constant triage where, you know, the analogy would be the ambulance from the gut is trying to get to the brain to support it and help the migraine reduce. But in many cases, there's a traffic jam and things are kind of at a standstill. So trying to go to other routes besides oral routes is why a lot of the medications in the migraine world are using non-oral routes to bypass it.
Are there any other ways we can support the communication during an acute attack to make food up the gut and better support the brain?
Yes. That's kind of the background for vagal nerve stimulation as an example. What I tell patients is there's gentle ways to improve the vagal tone to improve, deep breathing, relaxation, biofeedback, all the mind-body tools that you've talked about on the Migraine World Summit that we know help migraine. Part of that is it calms the gut and the brain to allow vagal nerve to, again, get back into the game. So those are gentle ways to do it. Rest, sleep, those are also additional ways to do it. The vagal nerve stimulators such as gammaCore, which are FDA cleared for migraine, I kind of think of those as a CPR for the vagal nerve. We're literally going to the vagal nerve as it transcends from the head into the neck and into the body to basically do CPR on it to get it back into the game, to revive it. And that's another way we know not only does it allow the vagal nerve to help the brain to de-inflame and to improve communication of neurotransmitters, but it also helps the gut because the vagal nerve then can also do its job better in the actual gut to, we know the vagal nerve communicates with CGRP and other neurotransmitters to modulate those to help those also reduce migraine in, from the gut up.
I've heard a couple of things when researching vagal tone that are things like if you hum or gurgle, it can help. Is that something that, one, is it legitimate at all? Or is that just a long-term strategy? Or could that actually help us during an attack to try to help settle things?
Anything that gives a signal to the vagal nerve that things are going to be okay, which is hard during a migraine attack to feel like, oh, I'm going to hum a happy song because I'm miserable. That sometimes may work. I have had patients to say, you know, I listen to, you know, music, and any signal that's relaxing can also allow the vagal nerve. But we do know, like, for example, when you look at vagal tone, which is often measured through something called heart rate variability, which some of the listeners, the audience might be familiar with through their smartwatch or other ways where they can detect heart rate variability, that improves when we are doing enjoyable activities, when we're singing, when we're laughing, when we're in, you know, with our favorite people, the heart rate variability improves. When we're exercising, doing things we enjoy, it improves. So during a migraine attack, it can often be difficult to find those things. So that's why more, not intrusive ways, but medical approaches like vagal nerve stimulation in the neck. There are also vagal stimulators in the ear, and you know, techniques such as humming, which kind of force the vagal nerve to kind of come in the game. But those aren't as strong as the other interventions like the gamma core to actually get the vagal nerve to be functioning optimally. So it's not harmful to try those. Again, there might be some vagal stimulatory methods that I wouldn't endorse with a patient. I have heard some that may be, not the safest thing to do, but humming, singing, trying to just relax, those are all good ways to get the vagal nerve to do its job.
Are there any you want to expand on ones we should not try?
There are ways that people put their feet in like extremely hot water, or, you know, they're doing vagal massage in the area, which is not necessarily safe, especially if you have any, carotid issues or heart disease. So those are more emergency measures when the vagal nerve and the body is not doing its measure, meaning, you know, vagal massage. So I would not recommend doing those. I would not recommend putting ourselves into any environments that are kind of try to jumpstart the vagal nerve that we don't feel comfortable with. That can often, you know, add to the difficulty of the situation. So really focus on things that are going to calm the body, which are then going to signal the vagal nerve to kind of come back into the game.
To add another aspect of our body into this, what is the oral gut brain axis?
That's one that's often under-recognized because we think about the gut, we think about stool testing, we think about, you know, what's happening in the gut. But the key factor is that what's happening in the oral mucosa directly impacts what's happening in the lower gut, the stomach and intestine. In fact, a recent study just this year that came out of neurology, and hopefully some of those articles will be available for the audience, found that there are specific bacteria in the mouths of persons who are more prone to migraine that are likely nitrate reducers. Bottom line, they promote increased levels of nitric oxide, which we know can be both a trigger for blood vessel instability as well as migraine. So you think about it genetically as well as environmentally. Maybe there's some genetics to that. We don't know. There's probably some environmental things over time that the mouth mucosa, the bugs that are in everyone's mouths, those folks with migraine already, just with what's happening in the oral cavity, are promoting migraine triggers, at least based on the early studies we've seen.
Is this related at all when people say nitrites are migraine triggers for them?
That's a great connection. And we do know that some folks are extremely sensitive, like, beets and other high nitrate foods and some foods with preservatives that are nitrates can cause an immediate attack because of the blood vessel instability. So there is some conjecture that in folks with migraine, that nitrate foods are propelled towards that nitric oxide much more than in folks that aren't prone to that. So it's not to say that nitrate foods should be avoided, because some of these are very healthy fruits, vegetables, but maybe not an extreme amount, because that might be a predisposition for some folks with migraine. And even in cases where it's not a high nitrate foods, if it even has a low amount, the conjecture is the mucosa will also propel that to a point where it might cause a migraine. So there's a lot more to learn. When I read that literature, my first thought is, what can we do to help the oral mucosa of those who are prone to that, to reduce those bad bugs, so to speak, to not be able to promote a nitric oxide? Are there mouthwashes? Are there oral, probiotics? Are there, there's all kinds of, tongue rinsing and scraping. There's no evidence in humans that makes a difference, but it does create the potential that if you have good oral hygiene, that it potentially has some potential benefit in preventing migraines. There's still a lot to study, but it does bring up some interesting questions.
What are microbial signatures and pain disorders that you've described?
Oh, yes. So we know that with the vast increase in microbiome studies, stool analysis that's out there, especially in research facilities, there are signatures for different conditions. So one of the first studies that really got me interested in the whole topic of the microbiome was actually in fibromyalgia. Folks with fibromyalgia, they basically looked just at the microbiome analysis of blinded in patients with fibromyalgia versus controls, healthy controls. And what they found is, with almost a 90% accuracy, just by looking at the specific the bugs that were heightened in one and lowered in that population, you could diagnose who has fibromyalgia and who doesn't, which is mind-boggling, that not knowing anything about the person, just the signature of what's in their gut tells me that they have fibromyalgia. And over the years, we've had the same with migraine, in neuropathy, even other types of pain. So when we look at migraine signatures specifically, we know that there are lower amounts of some of the anti-inflammatory species. So we've all heard about Acidophilus and the families they belong to, like Lactobacillus Acidophilus tends to be lower in some studies of migraine. Bifidobacterium is another family that's beneficial that tends to be lower. And then there's heightened amounts of some of the inflammatory bugs that can go on to, let's say, cause more inflammation, more difficulty for the vagal nerve to do its job. So if you do a stool analysis, typically the studies show that you will see these signatures. So things that are beneficial are lower, things that are maybe inflammatory a little bit higher. Not in all cases, but that is a signature that's there, which is why some people say, well, I want my microbiome tested to see if I have that signature and whether I can shift it with some of the diet and probiotic interventions. It's an interesting thought, but there's a lot of details that unfortunately don't make it that easy today.
When we're looking at these different signatures, are they different in different regions across the globe?
That's a really interesting question. And absolutely, we do know that because diet is very different around the world, one of the things we see, for example, is that in other parts of the world, there's a lot more intake of fermented foods. Almost every culture has their version of kombucha, their version of yogurt, kimchi, etc. In America, in the US, it's actually much less likely to get fermented foods on a regular basis in our diet. It's changing. We are seeing the benefit of fermentable foods. But so if you look at the gut microbiome of folks in Asia, in other parts of the world where there's more fermented food, you're going to see a much more diverse population of species. And that's one of the key things, not just with migraine, but just in general, more fermented more fermentable foods in the diet means more diversity. More diversity is good in preventing not just migraine, but a lot of chronic illness. So we do see a lot of regional changes. As far as changes in migraine populations in different parts of the world, you do see changes as well based on what's prevalent in that region, because there's also an environmental, who I live with affects my microbiome, as does the microbiome of folks with migraine based on who they live with, where they work, or what type of environmental exposures they have.
Can you tell us about the different animal studies about transplanting sick microbiomes onto healthy mice or other animals?
Absolutely. That's one of the other lines of study that's really compelling. And I think for folks getting into the microbiome literature and research, it's really, it's eye-opening, because multiple conditions, but we'll talk specifically about migraine, where they take basically the stool of somebody with migraine and then they transplant it into what are called germ-free mice. So these are mice that basically have a environment where they don't have any microbiome, and they are suddenly the proud owners of the microbiome of someone with migraine. And what's really interesting is study after study has shown that when you do that, that and typically the mouse will begin to have animal traits that are representative of migraine. So they'll have trigeminal sensitivity. So they'll be sensitive to their environment, to lights, to touch, things that are we see with trigeminal sensitivity in humans. So the migraine equivalent in animals happens not immediately, but a little bit over time, once the microbiome sets in and begins to communicate with the animal brain changes, and it can create that migraine. So that's been shown in multiple studies, and really brings up the point of, well, if a migraine signature can cause that, could we also put a non-migraine or a healthy signature to transplant? And not in the United States, I'm not familiar with any studies here, but other parts of the world, they have used, healthy, there are these what are called like super microbiome donors, very healthy subjects who don't have issues with medical issues, and their stool is utilized in a sterile fashion for folks who have very severe disease. Often it's things like C. difficile and severe GI issues, but it's being used in more and more conditions. So I wouldn't be surprised within the next, 5 years or so that we're going to see some research institutions actually doing fecal transplant in refractory cases for neurological conditions.
If I have that gut microbiome signature that is susceptible to migraine, does that mean that during an attack, it's flaring, it's getting worse, or does it just mean there's more inflammation? How does the gut signature translate into an active migraine attack?
That's something I think we're learning more about, because we know that the microbiome is incredibly sensitive to what's happening around us. There's actually been some studies looking at the microbiome pre and post an international air travel. So not a migraine attack, but just as an example, we know that even within that realm where you're stuck with a lot of other microbiomes, maybe in an environment that's not the most, desirable, but not necessarily a medical issue, you get on the other side of that, your microbiome has already changed. And then when you look at an actual migraine episode, we do know that with the gut becoming more slowing down, that also changes. CGRP levels can go up, which can influence migraine. We know the vagal changes, vagal tone changes, that can also influence the species. So whatever signature is there during an acute attack, many aspects of that are heightened. So you get more of the inflammatory bugs, you get less of the beneficial bugs. Your body's always trying to shift to help, but during an attack, it's hard for it because everything is slowed down. And slowing down in general is not good for the gut and influences more dysbiosis or leaky gut.
Do events like traumatic events, whether it's physical or emotional, do they impact our gut microbiome?
Yes. You'd be surprised to know that there's been literature on many aspects of trauma, as well as just even suboptimal lifestyle approaches. So there's been studies showing acute stress, taking the microbiome into the wrong direction with all the things we talked about, We know that sleep deprivation in a lab can also change the microbiome towards a negative. We know excessive exercise, not beneficial exercise, but to the point where, you know, there's severe exhaustion or overexertion, can also influence the gut negatively. So pretty much anything you can think of that's an adverse way to affect the body beyond diet can also influence the microbiome to go in the wrong direction, which, again, I try to talk to patients about, you know, how do we optimize those things to, because there's also research that if you optimize diet, or excuse me, sleep, stress management, there's actually a study of long-term meditators and demonstrating pre and post changes, beneficial changes in the gut. So all those things can actually go in either direction depending on lifestyle.
So if we are continuously having frequent migraine attacks, is that actually making our gut microbiome worse?
Conceivably, by slowing down the gut and increasing inflammation, yes, each episode could accumulate more, negative potential for the gut. At a certain point, though, I think the migraine signature is going to be pretty set. The microbiome does try to recover. So between episodes, it's always trying to, you know, try to go towards, a microbiome or signature that's going to improve inflammation, improve, you know, nutrient uptake. So unless it's, you know, chronic all the time and there's no changes for the better, the gut is always trying to recover. And the mucosa, the lining of the gut, is incredibly dynamic. So how we eat is always helping it to recover. So things like healthy diet, you know, fruits, vegetables, fiber, all those things are trying to counteract the effects of a acute attack. So I think that's the hallmark of our gut, is always trying to recover and help us. So how we can enhance that is the key.
So with people with more episodic migraine attacks, does that mean that either the days leading up to an attack, during an attack, a couple of days afterwards, are they all separate, or even during the anorectal stages where they're not having attacks, does their signature look different than when they're actively in attack?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we don't know the exact answer to that, because it's really hard to do microbiome testing through all the stages of a migraine. But we do know in general, as it's building up, all the things that create the migraine are also negatively affecting the gut based on inflammation, reduced communication, et cetera. So all those things are probably trying to go in the wrong direction. That being said, we do know that a number of the treatments that are often used for migraine can help the gut. Again, we talked about vagal stimulation. Anything that reduces the migraine attack typically also helps the gut and the vagal nerve get back into the game. So it's kind of a constant battle between, you know, good and evil, so to speak, to try to get the gut to do its job and to help the brain reduce the migraine potential.
All right. So until we can have the fecal transplants where we can just, you know, get everyone's really good.
You don't see up yet, right?
What are some practical steps that we can actively take right now to try to help?
No, absolutely. There is many things we can do. I'm very lucky to have a registered dietitian in my office who takes the discussion and really looks at how much is the diet a potential trigger, meaning are we following the standard American diet, which might have not a lot of fiber, may have some inflammatory fats, may not have enough hydration. All those things, if we shift it towards a more health-promoting diet, things like the Mediterranean diet, the DASH diet, the healthy eating plate diet, a higher omega-3 diet, all those things, my thought, and again, a lot of researchers agree, the reason they help migraine is multifold. But one of the ways is we believe is that it's helping the gut, because we know for every gram of fiber you increase in your diet, there for every 10 grams increase, the study shows there's about a 10% reduction in migraine potential. So just by a healthy diet, shifting more fiber into the diet, that helps. Fruits and vegetables also have a lot of phytonutrients, antioxidants, which we know can reduce the oxidative stress or inflammation in the gut while also affecting inflammation in the brain. So starting with, you know, regular hydration, consistent meals, staying away from the standard American diet, going towards more of the healthy diets, which we have multiple studies that show they're we know they help migraine. We don't know exactly all the pieces of that, but part of that is the phytonutrients and the higher fiber. So that's a good starting point before we go to non-dietary approaches or supplements.
When you were saying fruits and vegetables, how dramatic is that impact?
Oh, it's very strong, especially in populations where we know they're not getting a lot of fruits and vegetables. So one example of that is the pediatric and adolescent population with migraine. We know for, you know, in general, that population is not eating a lot of fruits and vegetables, is not getting a lot of fiber. So they're depleted of that. So again, the average American, we're trying to go, you know, 25 to 30 grams of fiber. The average American is about 12 to 15. The average teenager is probably in the single digits. So if we can get that single digits closer to the 20, we're going to already see some benefit. But in one study of looking at pediatrics, increasing fruits and vegetables with the input of a dietitian and, you know, monitoring increased the potential for migraines to decrease. So saying that again, overall migraines decreased by 50 to 70%, which is better than almost any medication we have. Arguably, one of the biggest tools we have is shifting diet, especially if we know that there are gaps. And we know fiber and fruits and vegetables is a gap. I think this the latest study that over 90% of the American population does not get the recommended dietary allowance of fruits and vegetables in their diet. So that's a great place to start.
What supplements would you suggest for someone who is just starting? They're a little bit lost. They have no idea. They've tried so many different diets. What supplements should we be trying to try to improve this?
Yes, I think supplements do make an impact. And in some cases, you know, diet's already been tried. Diet's been difficult. There may be, you know, areas of dietary sensitivity or folks who are just kind of tired out of another diet for their migraine. We totally get it. Supplements, you know, do have a place. I don't go right to probiotics, and I'll talk about that in a second. But the great place to start is actually just fiber supplements. You know, there are a number of ones out there, like, you know, your Metamucil, Sun Fiber, et cetera, that help you get that extra 10 grams a day if you're having difficulty doing that in your diet. I would start slow, maybe one or two extra grams per day. If you're having a difficult time adding that to your diet, putting fiber supplements into your diet might be a good place to start. You can also just start with fiber foods, adding things like flaxseed to your salads, to other parts of your dietary intake, your yogurt, for example, to get more fiber. So that's a supplement I like. I also like omega-3s. We don't think of them as gut-brain axis supplement, but we know that increasing omega-3s not only helps the brain because it is a place we need more omega-3s, but we know omega-3s also improve the gut by increasing the lactobacillus, bifidobacterium, as well as they promote short-chain fatty acids like butyrate. So omega-3 helps the bugs, the beneficial bugs, fully do their job by using that as a cofactor to create more of the things like butyrate, which we know is beneficial for migraine. So that's another supplement I like. Then when we get to probiotics, I don't have a go-to. There's not a go-to probiotic for migraine. Unfortunately, there's been a number of studies, and some have been positive, some have been neutral or negative. So we don't have one to hang our hat on as a sort of the hero probiotic. We do know in general things with lactobacillus, bifidobacterium that we get in yogurt and kombucha are not bad. They're likely are beneficial if you're not getting enough of that, but they're not, there's no, you know, positive migraine signature probiotic to try. That's one of the reasons my research team is doing a randomized trial right now using a probiotic which had signals of migraine benefit in a separate trial in those with IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. So those populations improved their IBS, saw some signals of migraine reduction. So we're doing a randomized trial, meaning half the group gets the probiotic, the other half gets placebo. We're doing microbiome testing pre and post. We're also looking at blood levels of your typical B vitamins, magnesium, to see if those are shifting based on feeding the gut, the probiotic versus placebo. And if that's the reason why some people benefit from probiotics and maybe others don't. So there's a lot more questions and answers with probiotics, in my opinion. So I don't usually use probiotics right off the bat. And I focus on the other supplements.
Are there any medications that either are for migraine or treat a lot of the common comorbidities that may be beneficial or harmful to our gut when we're trying to improve it?
And think about that because we're taking it for the migraine. And unfortunately, we do know that some of the common treatments through over-the-counter, things like anti-inflammatories, your ibuprofen, your naproxen, which many folks with migraine have to rely on, actually are not great for the gut, either short-term or long-term. You know, if you're using those over a period of time, they're more likely to cause leaky gut, make it more difficult for your body not to hyper or under-absorb things that can cause inflammation. We also know that they can go on to things like early ulcer formation, which we know also is not good for the gut. So in general, trying to minimize NSAIDs for many reasons, including other effects on the kidney, et cetera. But the gut is really where we want to focus on. What we sometimes do is add a acid blocker to the anti-inflammatory, your proton pump inhibitors, et cetera, to help the ibuprofen not affect the gut as much. That can help, but the proton pump inhibitor, by reducing acid, also makes it difficult for our body to absorb really important nutrients for migraines, such as B12, magnesium, zinc, iron. So if you're on those chronically, there's many reasons to be on that. If you're trying to heal an ulcer, there's many medically valid reasons you should stay on and not stop at cold turkey. But if you've been on it for a long term and there's not a ongoing reason to be on it forever, talk to your doctor about tapering that, or at least checking your nutrient levels, the B12s and things like that, to make sure you don't need a replacement to replete that nutrient. There's other drugs like that do that, like metformin. So with any drugs that you're on chronically, it's good to do a check, talk to your doctor. Are there any nutrients that I may be prone to have a deficiency that I should be taking, especially ones that may affect your migraine? So those are the common ones. Migraine medications tend to be overall neutral, especially if they're bypassing the gut. The one caveat would be some of the CGRPs are prone to cause constipation, and anything that causes constipation, whether it's a CGRP, a tricyclic antidepressant like amitriptyline, or any other constipating drug, also can affect the microbiome negatively. So one of the key things we do in our migraine history is how prone are you to constipation or diarrhea? They're both obviously things we want to balance out, but constipation tends to be more difficult for the microbiome. So we want to try to get that gut to be regular, which helps everything work properly.
If we experience constipation or diarrhea during an acute attack, is there something we should be taking during that acute attack? Like, for example, if we took a laxative or magnesium to, get things going, would that help the gut acutely to try to calm down the migraine attack?
That's a great thought. We do know that when we are constipated, there's slow motility with a migraine, which is very typical. Things that help it have been used. Probably the most common one is magnesium, both because it's readily available. We know that taking a GI positive movement type of magnesium, so your mag citrate, sulfate, oxide, those tend to propel. Can actually help in some regards, as well as increasing your magnesium, which is depleted during a migraine. Other medications like Reglan also are used in folks that are especially prone to constipation during migraines to help things kind of move and help them absorb medications. On the flip side, on a nausea standpoint, or when things are hyper going too quickly, there are things that help with slowing things down. So that can sometimes help. Things like ginger are sometimes used because that ginger has been shown to reduce leaky gut, improve how the gut absorbs, and also reduce nausea. So anything that helps the gut kind of get back into a normal working state, which isn't always easy during a migraine, is also a good idea for the microbiome.
All right, before we wrap up, I know we could talk about this for hours. Do you have any other last advice for people who are trying to go through this and trying to improve as much as possible, either acute or long-term?
Yes, I would say there's a lot of push to do microbiome testing because that's seen as sort of the quick diagnostic fix. Like we're going to do a microbiome test. It's going to show low X and we're going to take more of X and suddenly the migraines are going to go away. Unfortunately, that's very, wishful thinking. I think we're learning a lot about microbiome testing, which is very complex, very data heavy. And so if number one, I would say, if you're thinking about that, work with a clinician to make sure it's a good idea. And also a clinician that can help decipher the results. Don't do necessarily a over-the-counter version or direct-to-consumer because in some cases you can get suggestions. They will give you suggestions many times of the supplements they have in connection with the kit, but they're not necessarily things that you really need. I would say backing up, think about how is what I'm feeding my gut, and I mean that in a larger sense, of not just what I'm eating, but as well as my supplements, but how am I feeding my gut with my mindset, my exercise, my sleep pattern, my stress management. And if there's any areas that have a gap, those are the ones I would start with. It could be in the diet. Maybe I'm not eating enough fiber. There's ways to do that with, you know, shifting my diet, talk to a dietary expert, maybe use a fiber supplement, increase my omegas, do stress management, etc. Those are the places to start. And headache specialist is going to argue with you when you tell them I'm going to try to improve my sleep hygiene, get to bed, you know, on time, reduce my stress, do biofeedback, and you know, exercise more. Working with trained professionals, those all are good things for migraine and they're good things for the gut. I would start there. And secondly, I would say the gut can be your friend. It's not a scary thing. We talked about fecal transplant and it's very complex things that sound very scary. I would say we need to back up and say, you know, the gut can be our friend. And a lot of what we do in our daily pattern, what we eat, drink, how we communicate, our environment is where to start to optimize our gut, which over time we know can also go on to optimize our potential for migraine.
I know I have had a very difficult time trying to figure out reputable sources and everything like that. And I know our audience definitely feels that way. Where can we follow your work so we can learn more and know that we're going in a trusted direction?
Absolutely. So I blog on migrawell.com and there is discussion of nutrients and other approaches for the gut. There's also a section on neuromodulation devices, including vagal nerve stimulators. So there's a lot of discussion in that area for folks who are obviously in the West Coast, in California, who might have episodic migraine or interested in being a clinical trial. We would love for you to follow the link to see if you can qualify, to see if you can be in the study. And those are some areas. And I think I provided a number of articles that help decipher the microbiome literature, the glossary of, you know, what is diversity, what is, you know, family, species, et cetera. We're all learning about the microbiome. So I learn a lot from my patients. So I think there's more to be discussed here and hopefully I'll be able to come back and let you know how our trial looks.
We absolutely need that. Thank you so much for being on the Migraine World Summit.
My pleasure. Have a great day.